it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. This is a Patreon.com listener question episode. Going to get into listener questions. I posted something earlier today, and we got 20 now to where it makes sense to just do this as an episode for you guys. So first question comes from Wes. Thank you for subscribing, Wes. He says, Todd Golden has said he's going to be more involved in the offense this season. Have you noticed any changes, positive or negative, in the system so far? Obviously, this, Eric, with the absence of Kevin Hovde, who was doing quite well early at Columbia.
I do feel like it's a lot of the same, and I know that I spent a lot of the last 2 years saying that I didn't really love a lot of Florida's offense, but then like Florida goes and wins a national championship, so kind of looks outrageous that I said it, but like they're running a lot of the same stuff and it's obviously not being effective at the same level. So I still don't love a lot of the ways that they're trying to like enter the ball in the post in those like high low looks that are turning into a lot of turnovers. Still not a fan of that particularly. A lot of times when they're doing the duck in stuff, if it doesn't work, it just results in really poor spacing. So that's a problem too, that just didn't seem to happen as much last year. And just, I think that a large part of that is because you don't have someone to really break a guy off on the perimeter with the timing required to execute that. I will say that Florida has done probably a little bit better this year in after timeout plays. So I would presume that that is golden. And that's an area where they've taken some positive steps forward.
Yeah, that's a good one. I loved in the, there was somebody had it in the UConn. No, it was the Duke game where John Shire, Duke had 18 after timeout points and Florida had 15. I was like, man, you talk about some coaches that were in their bag a little bit. Now, sometimes that could just be like some shots went in, but I felt like there were actually some really good possessions in that game. I think Duke got like a UCLA cut dunk off of one, which was just gorgeous. And then Florida, Duke had called a quick timeout and gotten a basket. And then Florida clearly had something drawn up the other end. Empty side pick and roll for Alex Condon, which we'd seen almost none of. And, you know, Condon gets a foul, goes to the free throw line, hits his shots that time. But anyway, it was pretty. So good question there from Wes. Zach Kiern, longtime subscriber, longtime listener, wants to know about Micah Hanlockton. And I like this question because Todd Golden didn't call Micah out this week in media, but kind of said, we need Micah to play well, which is basically Todd Golden for he needs to play better. And he said, what do you think the root cause of Hanlockton's struggles are of late? Should we be concerned, or you think he'll start playing again? I am on record thinking that he will play better again, but I don't think this is all just like, oh, he got hit in the head earlier. He's not all there right now. Like, he's definitely struggling a little bit with some of the matchups that Florida's had.
Yeah, and he's someone who doesn't have a great level of like athleticism. Like, he's very tall, but he's not particular. Like, he doesn't move great. He's not particularly strong because he's so tall. It's like doesn't have like a low center of gravity, or so he's someone that when he is like he can't recover if he's a step slow on a read, he can't just like recover with his length to block a shot. So against George Washington, there was times where it did seem like he just absolutely powered down defensively and just completely missed rotations in pick and roll coverage. He was just like letting passes like whiz by his face that he just seemed like he was thinking too slow in every situation. And then there was times where there's still, which is just kind of the situation with him, is like, yeah, if like stronger, lower to the ground guys can really take it into his chest, they can knock it off his spot. So that is kind of the, it just, yeah, it just seems like he's a like slow processing right now. And I don't know if that's like a focus thing. I don't know if it's like you look at his time at Florida, His first year, it was like Florida was kind of like perpetually on the bubble until late in the year, where they got into like at least a situation where they were a seven seed or whatever. And it just seemed like Florida was playing for something on every single night. People who listen to the podcast knew that, like, that was like every it seemed just every game was big. And then, of course, he jumps in last year during a time where Florida is had kind of established themselves as a championship team. And now it's like Handlockton jumps in and it's like, okay, like big push for SEC tournament, SEC regular season, SEC tournament, like obviously the NCAA tournament. And maybe it's tougher for him, who's like only played in like important games for 2 years, to, or maybe he doesn't feel the kind of same level of importance. But yeah, whatever it is, I thought against George Washington, he had his worst game. And before that, yeah, just wasn't playing great, I thought. And then did have, like, I would say maybe a bad game against George Washington. And but yeah, it's just like when you look at him, it's like, yeah, he doesn't have athleticism to fall back on. He doesn't have like great offensive skill to like fall back on. So like he's got to be engaged. He's got to be processing the game at the highest level. And that's where I thought when he came off the injury, I was stunned with how quickly he seemed to be processing and how I thought he was reading the floor so much better than he did in his first year with the Gators. And again, maybe that was so much time on the sidelines that he got to watch for like a year as he recovered and he was on the sidelines. He just, all he was able to do was watch. And some of that's lacking. So it's nice that he's not in a position to be super relied on. Like, it's interesting to say that Golden's like, yeah, we need him to be better. And maybe that is like, not like, I don't know. He might be like, hey, we can do this without you. But like, if you're going to be on the floor, you need to be better. Cause yeah, I don't really feel like the Gators like necessarily like need him, but for a team that's strength, well, really it's everything right now is their front court. Like maybe, yeah, maybe they do need him.
Ed Quigley, CBS bracket champion, longtime Patreon subscriber, says, maybe obvious, but is this just who this team is? Or are there reasons to expect improvement? Right now, they're 352nd in the country in three-point shooting, 227th in effective field goal percentage, 192nd in assist-to-turnover ratio, but they're 25th in opponent effective field goal percentage, 4th in offensive rebounding, 30th in KenPom offense, 10th in KenPom defense. And I'd add, by the way, Ed, that they have two players in the top 10 in the country in defensive win shares, Alex Condon and Tommy Houck. So two elite defenders at least on their roster. If you care, if you like the win share stat, you know, maybe there's other things you can pay attention to. But it's a great question. Is this just the game that can't shoot straight? And Thomas Houck is how he closes the question. And I don't think lest I be accused of being sunshine pumper, which if you've listened to me for 7 years, I am not. At some point I feel like they'll regress to the mean a little bit. You know, I don't think, and I am the one, you know, Fawcett will talk about some of the stuff that he's crushed in kind of analyzing these things and analyzing the SEC even. When I did SEC shows, quite a few of them, people were like, what could derail Florida? And I was like, I don't know, not making baskets. Like, there's a chance that they don't shoot the ball very well. And I thought, like, if they shoot around 33%, they'll be fine. And that was kind of the number I arbitrarily picked, 33 or 34. Not arbitrary, but that was kind of where I have it. And they're 7 percentage points below that right now. Like, I still think they're going to get above 30. But, like, if they got to 31, they'd rank 15th in the SEC in three-point shooting. Because Georgia can't shoot. They're at 29.8. So that's the point, though. Georgia's 29.8, and Florida's 26.7 right now. Like, just not shooting the ball. So maybe, I guess, but I'm not ready to give up on Florida, you know, starting to shoot the ball better than they are at present. Largely because, like, they're also getting open shots and missing those.
I do think, like, stylistically, yes, this is – I do think that this is Florida. Like, I don't think that they're suddenly going to emerge as this team that executes
that's
half court. Or, so I think, like, yeah, stylistically. But, yeah, like, I think you stand to read – like, if the over-under on three-point percentage is set at 352nd or whatever the team is at right now. Like, yes, I think the Gators will be like better than that. Just like to what extent? And we recorded the initial podcast for the regular feed, and Neil pointed out that Florida profiles a lot like a Texas A&M team, and like Texas A&M had some like under Buzz had like some really good teams that were like well into the 300s at shooting the three, which is like not really what anyone wants, but it shows that like you can be a good team that can win games in the NCAA tournament, even being really bad at shooting the three. So I kind of do think that I still do think that Florida might end up being like 290th or something in 3-point percentage, which could be rough, but some of the like spurt ability of like Xavier Lee will probably like, he's probably still due for a couple 4-for-7s that will boost the overall percentage up. Probably think that Alex Connan will settle in something closer to high 20s or maybe 30%. And that would be what gets them up to like 280 or 290 in the country. But yeah, I do think stylistically Florida has shown what they will be this year. I think they are a defense rebounding. They're going to be a rock fight team. And that has worked for a lot of teams, including Houston, who made a national championship game. So it's not what a lot of people would ideally want to see, particularly coming off a year where, Florida scored the ball a ton and it was super fun to watch. I mean, I probably feel a little bit the same way where like, I'm not the biggest football fan, as people know, I really come in waves, but man, did I absolutely love that Kyle Trask year when he was just throwing the ball around the yard and Florida was scoring a million points. It was super fun to watch. And man, did I lose all steam the first time I watched Billy Napier coach. And I'm not trying to like kick sand on the guy on his way out, but just like for me as a casual, that was really hard to watch, going from teams that were like played a super fun style to like, man, if you're going to play a rock fight style, like you got to win. And like, there are teams that do it and that can do it and win. So I think that people would like lovingly appreciate the rock fight style if the Gators can stay in the top 15 of KenPom doing it, which would still be a lot better than a lot of those Texas A&M teams. But yeah, it is not like all is not lost. That is for sure, even if this is what Florida is.
Yeah, no, I think that's all fair. Hold on 2 seconds.
Yeah, just getting the question set. No problem.
Yeah, so Jonathan Shields, thank you for subscribing. Jonathan, out of Ingram, Lloyd, and Zay Brown, who do you expect to get the most minutes come conference play? Well, right now, I still like lean Zay Brown here because he's the one that gets the occasional minutes in games that aren't by games. I know CJ Ingram played a little bit at UConn. Golden said he had a pretty good rip initially and then came out and like lost Braylon Mullins and then lost someone else and just got abused in the pick and roll a couple times, and that was that. And so I think, like, they love his athleticism, obviously, but he's not playing team defense. If you need him to go guard someone one-on-one, that's great, but that's not really how this works, and unfortunately, they need more from him. And then with Alex, it's just understanding that, you know, it's just understanding team defense, and he's not showing it as much in practice. So as CJ is, like, CJ will have a good defensive practice. Alex isn't quite there yet. So they're going to have to look at him in bye games and figure out who they can get the most of. What I will say is this, and this I know from lots of conversations with the staff and really with other players, like if Zay Brown would perform consistently in practice, then the answer would be Zay Brown. But of those three in practice, either Lloyd or Ingram has the best practice every day. And so here we are where they don't trust any of them yet because there are legitimate reasons to worry about the defense with Lloyd and Ingram on a team that has to be really good defensively to win.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see Ingram getting some of the early chances, like not in every game, but it's not like I know that I was the one who before the season said that I wasn't high on Ingram's on the outlook for Ingram to contribute as a freshman. So if you think that what I'm speaking here is coming from a place of bias, like, you can think that, all a media literate bunch, but I just think that, like, I'm just not sure what problem Ingram solves. Like, again, what did we just talk about? What is Florida as a team? They're like a rock fight defensive team,
right?
Rebounds the ball really well. What does Ingram do? He, like, at least, like, even when Florida got him, like, the archetype of this player, what does, like, the archetype of him do? What did he do in high school? It was like, okay, this guy can be an athlete and defend and rebound. So it's just like the high-end outcome for Ingram, not high-end outcome, just like, if it comes together for him to contribute as a freshman, it's him defending better, which, as Neil pointed out, he's like not always defending great, but he also has some really good moments. But like, yeah, team defense, keeping up with faster actions. Yeah, that's going to be a challenge. And yeah, it's so, yeah, just like, what problem does Ingram solve? Like, he doesn't add much to me, given that Florida has defense and rebounding kind of covered. We all know what Florida needs. We know they need a spark offensively. They know they need someone who can make shots. So I just think that you at this point, like, the one lever you have net, like, yeah, you can hope that Boogie Flan starts hitting more shots. Yeah, you can hope that Xavier Lee hits more shots. Yeah, you can hope that Alex or Condon hits more shots. But like, the one, like, still in the toolbox ready to take out, like, your chances at some form of spark offensively are Lloyd and Brown. And it just seems like it's obviously been Brown with the chances already to get out there. I've mentioned that I really like what I saw from Lloyd in high school and would just like to see opportunity there. But I don't know, if Florida just doesn't, like, goes through a season and the whole year they never kind of get the offense right, and Isaiah Brown doesn't really play, and like, Alex Lloyd doesn't really play, I'm not saying one of those, like, takes you from being 30th to 15th in offensive efficiency. That wouldn't happen. But you probably think to yourself, okay, like, that's a guy who probably could have, or one of those guys probably could have given something. So I almost want to say Ingram, because it just seems like Florida staff still seems to talk about him really complimentary. But just in the desperate need for offense, I'll just say that I guess maybe it's half hope, half prediction, but it would be Brown.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Again, I think we'll see in these bye games if one of those freshmen takes a leap, maybe that changes. But again, with Zay, it's just, I can tell you, it's just consistency. Like, they'd love for him to be that guy. They'd love an eighth player, and he just doesn't show it enough for them in practice. And then he has good moments in games, like against George Washington, and you wonder why he doesn't play more, and it's because they have practices and not just games. Off-ball Sam, thank you for being a subscriber. He asked, assuming the shooting is what it is, how can we maintain spacing and good driving lanes schematically? Well, it's really hard because teams are already starting to sink their defenses, particularly with Condon. We're seeing a ton of double teams at present. And then his second question is, Todd generally teaches against taking mid-range twos. That's true. But I think Boogie looks more comfortable from there. Do you think we can or should be hunting those shots a little more, or is that math ball? Here's heresy. I love that question, Fawcett. I think they need to get Boogie going any way they can. If that means he takes a little more of a diet of mid-range twos, that's all right. But I'm interested in hearing Eric's thoughts on all this stuff.
Yeah, I don't think all mid-range shots are created equal. So if you even think about when Flat had some really good late game heroics and shot making, he had the moment where he was going against a drop coverage. He had that kind of hostage dribble, bumped off his defender, and hit a really, like, on balance, like, 12 footer. Like, I still really like that shot. Do we need him, like, curling off a ball screen and taking two dribbles and pulling from 15 with all his momentum going forward? Like, no, probably not. So that's one thing. I just don't think that all mid-range shots are created equal. And for Fland to take still some of those where it's, like, on a drive, he comes to, like, a jump stop and he, like, reverse pivots and has that, like, slight fadeaway. Like, yeah, I don't mind those, because I also, as much I mean, Neil, like, as much as obviously the lack of 3-point shooting is a problem, like, it is covered up the fact that Lee and Fland also can't make a freaking layup. So that is the other, like, and if it's like one thing is so loud, it's making up for their deficiencies elsewhere. Now, of course, both those guys couldn't hit layups last season either. So that was always going to be a problem, but you hope they were going to make more shots. So yeah, I would still say that I don't mind getting the right pull-up twos for Flan when he can get in deep. And it's probably a better look than him trying to finish against length at the rim in a lot of situations anyways. In terms of like maintaining spacing, like, yeah, that is a major challenge, especially when you're already Florida, who is kind of abandoned spacing in a lot of ways, just based on the style of having two bigs on the floor, having someone constantly looking for the duck-ins. Like last year, Florida didn't have like great quote unquote spacing, but you don't need great spacing if you have great shot making. And there's still so it's not like everyone speaks of spacing like it is, of course, like the be all and end all of basketball. For a lot of teams, it is. But Florida showed last year, like, no one would look at Florida last year and say that they had conventionally good spacing, but they were really, really effective with what they did. So I do think that Florida needs to be, with their bigs, still be a little bit more mobile and in terms of relocating on drives, because like last year when it was like a Clayton just able to get such a big advantage off just a quick first step getting into the lane, it's really easy for like a Chinyelu to just like look for the moment of the first dribble and go find his own man and just seal that guy like an offensive lineman. And that's just like not exactly the case with this group, and there probably needs to be a little bit more recognition of, oh, this is taking a little bit slower to develop, I need to drop back to the dunker spot, or I need to circle to the opposite block. And the other big probably needs to flash to the high post. That's something that is not like a player read thing as much. Like Florida as a staff needs to make some adjustments there, because yeah, you can get away with the spacing they are trying to utilize when you're shot makers or Walter Clayton. It is not working quite as well with this group. Now, I don't think that their spacing is anywhere near their biggest problem this year, but yeah, it's not necessarily helping. So really good question. Thank you for subscribing. It's smart fans like you that make the Patreon great.
Zane Howell, thank you for subscribing. Zane wants an updated take on Hauk at the three. Says he seems like they've been sticking to it. And again, I just think like this goes. There are two answers to this, right? Because Eric did some on-off splits and showed, you know, that Hauk's on-off splits might surprise you, right? Like Florida's seems like there's definitely better offense when Hauk's off the floor, whether that's a spacing product or just something else. Who knows? I mean, it could be the fact that Hauk plays so much that, you know, when he's off the floor, the rare moments that he's off the floor are against bad teams where Florida runs up margins. Who knows? But, you know, I think that the problem that Florida has right now is that Tommy Hauk is the best option they have at the three. And, like, so until Zay Brown decides that he's going to be the eighth man for this team, or until they feel comfortable enough playing Urban Klavsar, Boogie Flynn and Xavien Lee in the three-guard lineup, like, they're going to keep Tommy at that spot. I mean, I honestly think it's just kind of a math and numbers issue right now. I think that they'd love to play Tommy at the four a little more and intended to before the season. You know, not that they were going to not start Hauk at the three, they were. But I think the thought was it would be a little more fluid than it's ended up being. And now it just can't be. So that's kind of my thought on where that's going to go. And we've talked a little bit about finding an eighth man already.
Yeah, I do think I would prefer Hauk at the four. I just think when you look at what he does best, driving the ball in a straight line, just it would be made much easier for him if it was fours guarding him than threes. He has had some problems with turnovers at times. Now that he's got smaller defenders on him, like, those guys have given him some problems. The big advantage of having him at the three is he's been so good as a cutter, because it's and some of the buckets are just like kind of funny, because he just like, as he just cuts to the rim and like face cuts a guy, he's just got so much more length to catch and finish around those guys. So there's definitely benefit to playing him at the three. I do think it would be better in a vacuum to have him play at the four. But yeah, like Neil said, there's just, you would need one or two of the guys we talked about earlier to really get in the regular trusted rotation to get more Hauk at the four. And I am not anticipating that happening. So yeah, I do think the Hauk at the three is going to be the, still kind of the base moving forward. And yeah, the lineup stuff is definitely interesting. It'll be an interesting monitor. I think it mostly just speaks to how Florida's starting lineup on the whole has not done great together. And there's probably one or two guys potentially most responsible for that when you look at the overall lineup data. But something that'll be, I guess, interesting to watch. But I don't know how interesting lineup data is even going to be for Florida moving forward, because when they only have seven guys they trust, like, yeah, there's not going to be too many interesting combinations to really look at.
Absolutely. It's just tough. I think they want to find an eighth guy, and these three games, they're probably going to be able to do it, but we'll see. Matthew, but when I say probably going to do it, I mean, I think they're going to at least roll into SEC player, hoping to play an eighth guy, and we'll see how long they believe in that when they go on the road to Como on January 3rd. Matthew says, thanks for all the great content this season. Thank you, Matthew, for subscribing. Something I've thought about as we've watched Flan and Lee have their ups and downs is that most examples of success stories under Golden thus far have typically come from guys in year two or even year three. Will Richard coming into their own? Was there a more long-term approach the staff could have taken, like adding more of a developmental piece or two in the backcourt to better set up the program for success? Well, okay, like, I reject the premise of the question a little bit. Like, I appreciate the premise of the question. I also don't think that Florida's not set up for success this season. Like, I still think that if they shoot 5 to 6 to 7% better, they're a top team. They have four losses by 15 points. So, and three of those are to either top six Torvik or top seven KenPom teams. They're ranked 15th in Torvik right now. They're ranked 13th in KenPom. So Florida's pretty good. They're also 6-4 with one quad one win. Which is not where any of us thought we would be, I think, recording this show. Even I kind of thought 8-2 would be where they were at. I know Matt Norlander said he thought they'd be 7-3, and they're only one game off his projection. I mean, that's fair, I guess. But I don't think Florida didn't set themselves up to be successful. Now, in terms of longer program building, like, I think Boogie Flan is quickly playing his way into a junior year, especially in the world of NIL. So you might get that wish if he doesn't transfer, you know, or pick it up and play better. And then if Florida goes on a deep run, Boogie will be gone and everybody will be grateful. So that, I think, will play itself out. But no, I don't know. Like, I don't think, I'm trying to think of who Florida evaluated at the guard spot that would have been here multiple years, and there's not really anybody they looked at. Like, Desmond Claude would have been gone. They didn't want him. That was a good pass.
Yeah, Desmond Claude would have not helped. That's
He would have just, he would have made this worse. Denzel Aberdeen would have been gone anyway, and that, like, you have to include him when you talk about how they built this roster. So you could argue Denzel would have helped, but I don't know. Denzel takes so many bad shots, man. Like, I watch Kentucky, and I love Zell. Like, he's a great – he is a great defensive player. But he takes some terrible shots, and he dribbles the ball into the cement for 10 seconds of possession, too. And that I don't know what Mark Pope thought, why he thought that would work, if he was going to play him 35 minutes a game. I don't know. Eric, what are your thoughts on this question?
Well, I mean, like, the thing is, like, Florida wins a national championship last year, and kind of the thought of, like, well, if they brought in another, like, if you replaced a guy that played minutes last year with someone who was more of a developmental guy, well, maybe Florida doesn't win the national championship last year. So that's kind of the thought. And Florida kind of tried the concept of bringing in a developmental player. That was Sam Alexis. You bring in guys like that and you might miss, like, Sam Alexis. And two, they might just, you know, leave anyways. So it's just, it's really hard to build in that really long way. And I mean, also, I'm the guy who didn't think that two seasons ago, and I know that I, like, pretty much everyone disagrees with me, but I was the one who said that, like, 2 years ago when Florida made the NCAA tournament and lost to Colorado, how I thought that was a disappointing year. And a lot of people really disagreed with me. And I thought that was because, like, yeah, you don't really, in my opinion, you don't have multiple years to like rebuild every time in college basketball. So Golden's first year was bad. I think everyone kind of agrees with it. I didn't think the second year was great. Then they win a national championship. Well, like, I don't know if you want to get into situations where like, you know, especially with the returning front court, like would people have preferred developmental players to like make another real run at it in 2 or 3 years? Like, no. And also in terms of like, could Florida have set themselves up better for this year? I mean, they had the money to go and get two of the best guards in the portal. Like they, like whether, not saying that they necessarily are the best, I should say, but they certainly are paid like it. Like Florida had the money to go get two premier guards in the portal. Or I guess you could say one, and then one kind of opened up with Denzel leaving. But whatever the case may be, returning your front court entirely, that's really good. And going out and getting two marquee, huge NIL number guys, like that should be set up for success. And if Florida's season does go, obviously I don't think that Florida's season's going terribly. They're still okay. But if things were to go spin negatively and they finish 30th in KenPom even, and are an 8 seed and lose in the first round, like I would say that that is a pretty disastrous outcome given the resources that they had available. But that's not their trajectory right now. So we'll see. But yeah, I just think that bringing in developmental guys, either it's like one, like what Florida did, you bring in Walter Clayton when they did, you bring in Will Richard when they did, and that kind of resulted in 2 years that I didn't think were great, culminated in an NCAA tournament. Most people would make that trade 100 times out of 100, but there's also a lot of times you go bring in Sam Alexis and then that guy doesn't totally work out. So I do think in today's climate, if you're in Florida, you go all in every single year. Like that should be that if anyone, whether it's Golden or the next coach, if Golden were to leave for something, like if someone says like, oh yeah, like we're rebuilding this year, I mean, unless Florida's NIL situation changes a whole bunch or something like that and would be,
it won't,
that'd be a wrong, that would be a, yeah. So that would be a wrong assertion. Whatever happens this year, we know that a good number of guys are going to be gone. So it will be somewhat of a, there will be a lot of new Gators on the team next year. If Golden were to say like, oh yeah, you know, we're just, we got to, you know, get some younger guys, like develop them. It's going to be a rough year, but like, we'll make a real run at it in 27, 28. Like that would not be the right approach in my opinion at all. And I definitely don't think Golden would say that. It doesn't seem like to be a style, but yeah, I know when the roster is not looking great at the moment or as good as it could have been, it's a chance to be like, okay, well, what could they have done different? Florida could have evaluated the best guys in the portal better this year. Like that seems to be the like that's what Florida should have done better. I don't think that it should have been. They should have had more developmental guys ready to take a step.
Yeah, that's fair. I also think if they get Xavier and Lee that they've gotten in 3 of the last 4 games, like, I mean, the Duke game was loud, right? And to Eric's point, I think, I don't remember when Eric said this last, but like when he plays well, it's also loud. but the Duke game felt so loud. And the UConn game, he was just really good. Like, yeah, I wish he didn't go 1 for 7 from 3. But he had 19.6 rebounds and 7 assists and was the KenPom MVP. Like he played pretty darn well. And then he went down to the Orange Bowl Classic and won the MVP and made fun of the award, which I loved. you know, so like, I think if they get that guy and it's like, we just need Boogie to be better, then they're probably cooking. And, you know, especially, and I don't mean cooking like they're as good as last year. They're not going to be, but they also like can win this conference that they're in because it's not a generational conference. It's a good conference. But I think the SEC might be a league where there's like 9 teams that are good enough to get to the second round. And then there's like 5 think pieces on what went wrong in the SEC when only 2 of them get to the Sweet 16. You know, that's the sense I'm getting about this league right now, to be frank.
Yeah. And when it's inevitably, yeah, these teams went for depth over getting in the best players, that those think pieces will be correct. As much as I think that Florida, like people know this who follow Patriot, like I was big on Fland, so I'm not going to like backtrack on that one. I didn't love the leap. yeah, I didn't love Lee as much as most people did, but like as a process, I am very glad that Florida said, hey, we have all this NIL. We are going to try to get two killers. And yes, it appears that they missed, but I'm very glad they did this as opposed to like, oh man, we're going to bring in like five guys that we think could be real good depth, like doing what Kentucky did, doing what a number of teams in the league. I just, which makes it like that much sadder that unfortunately Florida wasn't able to just like hit slam dunks, at least so it appears with their portal additions, because I do feel like so many teams in the SEC by going depth over top end quality have really hurt themselves, with Kentucky being the ultimate example. But I at least like the way that Florida did approach the portal, even though I didn't agree with their action, like at least one of their decisions. Process was right. So going into next year, when Florida's going to have more spots to fill, I certainly hope they don't try to say, oh, we're going to bring in six guys that are like rock solid and developmental pieces and like they'll be good competition. Like, you better get two or three guys that you think are awesome and are paid appropriately to be awesome. And that actually probably will mean that Florida brings in some like developmental guys, because they're not going to have NIL to bring in, like, obviously just can't bring in six all SEC players. I hope they bring in two or three guys that are very highly paid and are proven and will be expected to be compete for all SEC teams. And then, and then two or three guys that are going to be unheralded guys that you hope that you get good evaluations on, because that's just the way I'd like to see them allot their resources.
So this will be a Florida basketball podcast, and Florida Basketball Hours podcast is brought to you by mybookie.ag. We have a special subscriber link for all our listeners, which we will post on any platform that you get in the show information section. It'll be our special link. Get you to MyBookie to sign up. When you sign up, their college basketball betting site's very easy to find. And listeners who use the code that we post, which is Neil500, will get a special welcome bonus for their first bet at MyBookie. It's called a bet back bonus. The way it works is if you make a bet and claim the bonus, you just opt in on your bet slip, and that's basically like insurance. So if you don't win, you get your money back on your first bet, up to $500. There's a one-time rollover, but that's it. So pretty good deal for Florida Basketball Hour listeners, and it's exclusive to you all. So we just want to say we appreciate you, and we appreciate our sponsors at MyBookie. The next question, I think, that's super interesting, and that gets into what we've just discussed, by the way, a little bit, is like what a way too early view on next year's roster from Cal Johnson, kind of thinking about it. And it's impossible to kind of prognosticate that in the world of the portal. Honestly, like, it's very difficult to look at it. But I already mentioned, I think there is a world where Boogie Fland is back, and it's not an unlikely world. And I think Florida would they like him. They like his personality. They love the way he defends. He's struggling offensively the last couple games. There's no doubt. But they like him. Obviously, you lose Hauk to the draft. He's gone. Connan. So no, don't have any fantasies of getting them back for their senior year. It's not happening. Especially Tommy.
Are you open to a world at all that Condon at a position where NBA's into that? If Florida said, hey, we want to, and you could argue whether or not, but I would just say, I'm not saying I predict it, but I could see a world where Florida says, hey, at this point, your stock is not, like, the NBA is going to be there for you probably in the same capacity this year. We'll pay you $3.25 million that you bank. Would you come back for what? I'm not saying Florida would do that or should do that, but I do think the more I think about it, I am like open to that as a possibility.
Yeah.
Considering I don't think that Condon, at least through 10 games, has particularly helped his stock to the point where he's like a clear first rounder that like needs to go.
I think
just wanted your thoughts on that.
No, I think that's fair. And that's a good point. Hauk isn't coming back. He's already,
I will agree with you on that one.
He's already a year older. Chenyulu graduates, so he's gone no matter what. Micah may return. We'll see. they're going to ask for an additional year from the NCAA. So we'll see what the NCAA does. You can never count on the NCAA to do the right thing. The right thing would clearly be to give him another year of eligibility. We'll see what happens. And then Florida's going to have money. How do I know they're going to have money? One way I know they're going to have money is that there were 6,000 Florida fans at Madison Square Garden, which never happens to UConn. And when Florida scored, it was loud. And I talked to some people before that game at a Florida Victorious event. And important people, not run-of-the-mill Joe Schmo donors, who are awesome, by the way. We need you. but, like, you know, the moneyed folks. And one of the bigger money Florida basketball boosters said, this program is not going anywhere while I'm alive. And I think the point he was making was, like, we are going to make sure that Todd has what he needs. So the Gators are going to have money, but they're going to have to replace Tommy Houck, who we don't use the term generational. We use it way too much. I'm not going to say it about Tommy. What I will say is he's a program legend. So you're going to have to replace a program legend for the second consecutive season. And then maybe another one in the Condon. And then you're going to have to get a three-point shooter who can make the shots. And I think those three pieces are all super expensive, right? So after that, to Eric's point, it's developmental pieces, and then it's keeping Alex Lloyd and CJ Ingram on campus, which I don't think is going to be a terrible challenge. We'll see what happens. Like, Alex wanted to be a Gator since he was 15. So I don't think, like, hey, it was hard this year and I didn't play as much as I should have means he, like, runs home to Miami or anything. But they're still going to have to pay him to stay, right? Just like, you know, I don't think CJ's off to Kansas, which was really his only other – that was the other serious suitor. And now that the bag man Norm is on field of 68 – and that bags are legal, we don't have to worry about that as much. But my point is, like, that would be kind of my way too early look. As to Eric's point, there are some challenges, but I think when you kind of look ahead, you know, that's interesting. And then there's AJ Brown and the developmental redshirt, which gives you a little bit of flexibility. It was interesting last week that Todd said they're not certain they're going to redshirt him now, and I'm like, oh. Do you guys need shooting so bad that you take that red shirt off? But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I think people would just love any, like, roll of the dice, but unexpected. But yeah, it's there's so many ways to, if, like, someone even wanted, like, go look at mid-major plus leagues. Go look at the guys putting up big numbers there with eligibility. Start to, I bet like Malik Grady's probably already got his, like, targets of sorts he'd like to see. And but and then, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like, one thing the Gators didn't do this year, which I thought would have been really good, and we'll see if Florida dips into, is, like, the international market, like the actual international market, not, like, without, like, obviously, like, Condon really good, but, like, not, like, bringing in guys that played at NBA academies that are coming in as freshmen, like going and getting the 21-year-old pros that are being amazing at Illinois and Virginia and BYU and just, like, all these places where, like, you can go and get guys that are 21-year-old that played in the Bundesliga in Germany or the ACB in Spain that are amazing right now, or, like, Kamardine at Ole Miss, who no one was even talking about, even though I'm like, oh my god, this guy's gonna light the league up, and he's been incredible at Ole Miss because he was a sick player in the top division in France. Like, no brainer to me. So Florida didn't really dip into that market, and I would not be surprised if Florida did it this year and brought in a 21 or 22-year-old pro who was and I know a lot of people be like, oh well, didn't they do that with, like, Urban Klavzar? Kind of, but, like, Klavzar they brought in as a, you know, guy who played second division, or kind of ultimately, like, I know, like, I love the story of him playing in the EuroLeague at 16 years old, which is insane, but guy, you know, ultimately kind of landed as, like, a solid player in Spain's second division, where teams like the ones I mentioned before in Washington, like, teams that are bringing in these guys that were, like, really, really good players in really, really good top leagues in Europe. So that would also be another way that Florida could look to get very, very good right away. Those guys are very expensive, especially now that people, so there's a lot of old school coaches who thought that this wasn't going to work. Many teams are showing that this would work. So, but man, after after, you know, going through what Florida did with Lee and Flint, going and getting a 21 or 22 year old that's like getting it done in the ACB or the Bundesliga or French Pro A or Italy Serie A, like, yeah, that would be a good way to go as well. And yeah, so that would be another option to look at. But yeah, it's when you got money, you got unlimited possibilities. So yeah, not concerned with Florida's ability to put some good players on the court.
Nor am I terribly concerned about Jonathan Sapphire and Todd Gilden figuring out how to build a roster. But Tim Gutman will close us out. Has the pendulum swung too far into blaming the Babcock for our issues in big games? For example, Flynn had the best plus-minus in the Duke game and the best plus-minus in the UConn game. We've seen Lee play harder, not turn the ball over, etc. Do you believe Golden's thought that this team really only needs to get 5% better to be in the top tier? Well, I mean, again, I think they need to be 5 to 7% better from deep to be in the top tier. I still think if they shot 33 or 34% from three-point range, like in SEC play, they'd be the SEC champion. They're very good in every other area of basketball. But you have to score to win. And when they don't, when you miss as much as Florida does, you become a lot easier to guard. And your margins are very small. Getting back to, you know, the Texas A&M analogy, like, it's hard to run away from people. And also, like, it's easier for teams to catch up. Like, they bang a couple shots and you miss a few shots. You know, I mean, even the other day against George Washington, Florida got up 20, and then, like, GW goes on a 9-0 run that was not like your traditional 9-0 run where, like, you know, maybe there's a turnover and a transition layup and a couple threes and it happens really quick. Like, this was a 9-0 run over like 3 minutes of basketball. You know, like, Florida just can't make anything. And GW has like 7 possessions and scores 9 points. So even the runs look different when you can't hit shots.
Yeah, I do think that the backcourt has taken too much blame, because I know I've said this now a bunch of times today and also in our other podcast recording, but that I just don't think that the offense is great in putting a lot of guys in positions to succeed. And I know that right now it's been Xavier Lee and Boogie Flan, particularly Lee, taking just a whole bunch of the brunt of the criticism. And yeah, I don't think it lies exclusively on those guys. I also think that Flan is defended quite well, not as good as I think he can, not as good as I think he did last year at Arkansas. But I still do think, like, you look at the fact that the defense has been really good, and I think that Flan has played a big role in that. So I actually do think there's also an area where he's not getting enough credit. But yeah, like, while Florida's backcourt does deserve criticism, I suppose you can also argue to what extent do they deserve criticism versus, you know, the coaches that brought them in to do stuff, and they're kind of struggling with some of the stuff they also struggled with last year. So kind of getting why you can't be a crazy surprise what's happening here. But yeah, I would say that there's been too much abuse at the hands of these guys. So yeah, we'll see if they start string together some better games, and the narrative could turn quickly. We know that. We know people would love to cheer for these guys. And while especially Lee plays a style that is taking a lot of difficult shots, well, you know, there was times 2 years ago where Walter Clayton would miss some of those shots and people weren't always loving it. And then when he does start making it, he's one of the most fun players in the country. If Lee does start to string together games where he shoots the ball really well, like, people will very quickly turn and start to absolutely love the guy, I'm pretty sure.
Agree with that. Mark Lewis, by the way, has subscribed and listened to us forever and ever. He had also asked a question about Tommy Houck in the three, which I think we answered. So, Mark, you're the man. We appreciate the years of support. So, thank you. That is it for our listener questions episode. A bunch of content for you here on a Sunday night. Gators have St. Francis and Colgate in the next 7 days. So, you'll probably hear from me a bunch this week. And we'll get back to it before SEC play with Fawcett. So, everybody, we appreciate you, and go Gators. Keep attacking closeouts.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. there's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.